Welcome to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. The fictioneers, the artists, the editors, and others. Brought to you by the PulpNet. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at the PulpNet. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at ThePulp.net.
Howard reported the sale to August Derleth in a letter on November 1st, 1935, so it's pretty quick turning around. And he wrote, "Doubt I could make that market regularly as it requires a deft, jaunty style foreign to my natural style." The story appeared as She Devil in April 1936 under the pen name of Sam Walser. Howard was pretty much like a lot of the others that didn't want his real name out there on these spicy magazines.
In this episode of Pulp Tales, pulp collector Morgan Holmes looks at Robert E. Howard and other writers of adventure stories in the spicy pulp magazines. This Pulp Tales was recorded at Pulp Fest 2024 in Pittsburgh on Friday, August 2nd, 2024.
Well, thanks for everybody hanging around, and we'll get started here. The spicy Robert E. Howard. And
Sam Walter.
That's right. Spicy Adventure, July 1934 to December 1942. And the July 34 was actually the Ashcan issue. And that's what it looked like. It was basically to get that down, you know, as the number one. And you have Robert Leslie Bellum was in it, you know, an author very, very much associated with the spicy line. It was 1934 that you had the first real issue going on there, and you had E. Hoffman Price, Norman A. Daniels, Robert Leslie Bellum with three different stories. And yeah, you'll see this a lot of times, a lot of Bellum, Norman A. Daniels in the earlier issues. Some of the other authors that were showing up in Spicy Adventure at some point or another, Gunnar Hjertstedt, who's Day King. Manly Wade Wellman is Wade Wells. Victor Rousseau, who was associated with the Muncie magazines on the scientific romance period, is Lou Merrill and Hugh Spear. Hugh Cave as Justin Case. He first appeared in February 1936. And another guy, I really don't know, Edward Truett Long, under various pseudonyms, was in the Spices. And also Howard Wandry, Donald Wandry's brother. And most of them, I think, have been reprinted by Fettigan and Bremer in the past for that. But you get Robert E. Howard was looking 1935 for other markets. He had sent a letter in May 1935 to Farnsworth Wright, editor at Weird Tales. And he wrote, "Weird Tales owes me over $800 for stories already published and supposed to be paid for on publication, enough to pay for all my debts and get my back on my feet again if I could receive it all at once. Perhaps this is impossible. I have no wish to be unreasonable. I know times are hard for everybody, but I don't believe that I am being unreasonable in asking you to pay a check each month until the accounts are squared. Honestly, at the rate we're going now, I'll be an old man before I get paid up. And my need for money is now urgent. I may not and may never be a great writer, but no writer ever worked with more earnest sincerity than I have worked on the tales that appeared in Weird Tales. Of late, when I write of Conan's adventures, I have to struggle against the disheartening reflection that if the story is accepted, it may be years before I get paid for it." And that was about the time he wrote Weird Red Nails, which was the last Conan story. He was pretty much done with Weird Tales. Others had bailed, you know, Donald Wandry, Frank Belknap Long went over to Astounding. Lovecraft was just pretty much pretty disgusted. And Howard had written a letter to E. Hoffman Price asking, you know, is Weird Tales a racket at this point? You know, so he was looking for other, I know he wanted to get into popular publications badly. He was looking around, he got into Street and Smith. And so the spicy line came along, and He began writing for it, and his agent, Otis Delbert Klein, received The Girl on the Hell Ship on October 7, 1935. He sent it to Frank Armour at Spicy Adventure. And Howard reported the sale to August Derleth in a letter on November 1st, 1935. So it was pretty quick turning around. And he wrote, "Doubt I could make that market regularly, as it requires a deft, jaunty style foreign to my natural style." The story appeared as She-Devil in April 1936 under the pen name of Sam Walser. So Howard was, pretty much like a lot of the others that, didn't want his real name out there on these spicy magazines. And the plot has Raquel O'Shane, late of San Francisco, described as slim and supple with foamy black hair, dark eyes with blazing deviltry, and an ivory-tinted skin, heritage of her mixed Celtic Latin blood that made men's heads swim at first sight. And you got Wild Bill Clanton is the protagonist, and he's kind of a cross between Sailor Steve Costigan, which was in Fight Stories, and some elements of like Conan. You know, in a lot of the Conan stories, Conan's manipulating people like the Continental Op does, Dashiell Hammett stories. And, Wild Bill Clanton's kind of doing this too. And he's good with his fist, and he would just, try and manipulate. And he takes over the ship, the Saucy Wench, which is a, good title for a boat. And he wrote a sequel, Ship and Mutiny, which was rejected. And now an interesting thing about this is they mentioned blackbirding, and which was in the late 1800s in Australia. They were going out on ships like the Fiji, grabbing natives, taking them back to work on the sugar plantations in Australia. And so you kind of places, historically the story just from that reference, and it's a sailing ship somewhere in the last quarter of the 1800s. And the next story that was published, Desert Blood, in June 1936, there's an interior for She-Devil. And another one, a little bit of skin showing there. And then here we have Hugh Cave on the cover, and also Lou Merrill, who's Victor Rousseau. But Desert Blood. And that's more contemporary all of a sudden. You get a mention of Luger pistols and Soviet rifles. And you'll see this with Robert E. Howard, like the El Borak stories that were in Thrilling Adventures and Complete Stories and Top Notch. They get kind of vague, there's mentions of certain weaponry. There's like one story in Thrilling Adventures that's set in 1918 in the Middle East at the very end of World War I, and the Ottoman Empire is disintegrating. And other El Borak stories, you kind of get the sense it's in the 1930s. So you kind of get this with Howard, where you get a little bit of this time shifting going on. Battery just switches the time for the character and figures nobody's going to pay attention anyway for that. And then the next one is The Dragon of Khao Su, and that was placed by Otto Binder, who was Otis Delbert Klein's agent in New York City. Klein was in Chicago at the time, and Binder was the took quite an interest in Howard. He'd written to Klein. He said, "I'm going to break Howard in." As my personal belief, I've looked at text of comparing Binder's prose. I actually think that Binder finished Elmer and took Howard's outline and fleshed out the last chapter and a half for that. I've had some people disagree with me quite a bit, but my view is disproven. Nobody has. And for that. But the Dragon of Khao Su, set in Singapore, which is, very exotic city. Just like Shanghai was, and it's that was in the September 36 issue, and it involves a carved dragon figure of ivory that's kind of the MacGuffin of the story. If you're going to set an adventure story in the 1930s, Singapore is definitely one of the greatest places to do it. And next one you get, November 1935, 36, pardon me, that is a typo on my part. That's set in Shanghai, and it involves a purple ruby. So you're beginning to see a little bit of a little bit of repetition here. And again, Shanghai is another exotic city, most dangerous city at the time. If you've ever read about Sykes and Fairbairn, who pretty much trained the British commandos in World War II, they were policemen in Shanghai. And I have a couple books, one on hand-to-hand combat and another one on shoot to live. And it was just insane. The gun battles and stuff they got into with criminals in Shanghai, just a crazy city back then. Then the next story is Murderer's Grog, and it's set in Peshawar. There's an interior for Purple Heart. Artwork's quite a bit better on this one than these previous ones. Looks like it'd be a different artist. And Murderer's Grog, set in Peshawar. And there's a... And that involves a Russian spy, Sonia Orminov, for that. And that was the last story of Robert E. Howard in Spicy Adventure. He was dead at that point, died in June 1936. He'd sent in a couple other stories. One was Daughter of Feud, and one of Guns of Khartoum, which was set during the Siege of Khartoum in the 1880s in the Sudan, where Chinese Gordon got killed. And so that's an out-and-out historical. And the Wild Bill Clinton stories, you kind of look at them, they're kind of like a mix of Jack London and Sax Rohmer. And something that happened is, you get into the 40s, I don't think things were going well for the Spicy magazine. They started doing a lot of reprints. And so there's another picture from his last story there. But then you had Desert Blood was reprinted as Revenge by Proxy, and this time it's September 1942, and it's by William Decatur. And then the next month, in October 1942, Purple Heart of Ehrlich was reprinted as Nothing to Lose, and that was as R.T. Maynard. And then Murderer's Grog was reprinted as Outlaw Working as Max Nielsen. And so that was something going on there. Howard had mentioned in February 1936 to Novelyn Price in a letter. She was looking to break in the magazines, be a writer, and he mentioned the Spicies to her, and he said, "The stuff must be hot enough to make the readers bat their eyes, but not too hot to get the censors on them. They have some definite taboos, no degeneracy, for instance, no sadism or masochism. Though extremely fond of almost nude ladies, they prefer her to retain some garment ordinarily, like a coyly revealing chemise. However, the taboo isn't ironclad, for I violated it in nearly every story I've sold them. The hero should be an American, and the action should take place in some exotic climate. Plots should be rather complicated, action fast-moving. The handicaps of stories that are short are obvious, little space for character development or for subtle unfolding of plots. The narration must be dynamic, clear-cut, vivid. Cynicism and humor have their place, but not too much humor." And probably the funniest one is on December 5th, 1935, in a letter to H.P. Lovecraft, Howard was encouraging Lovecraft to try his hand at spicy stories. And he said, "Why don't you give it a whirl? You can use a pen name if you like. I did, and I think most of it contributors do. They like good, strong plots, but the sex element is a cinch. Any man can write that part of it. Just write up one of your own sex adventures altered to fit the plot. That's the way I did it with the yarn I sold them." So, Lovecraft sex adventures, pretty funny. E. Hoffman Price was big. He's a writer I like, a lot of his stuff. And he took a look at the breakdown in the Arkham book of memoirs of Price on various writers I've known. And there's a bibliography, and it looks like about of the pulp stuff that Price had about 500 stories, and my guesstimate is about 60%, 65% of them were in the Spicies. And I remember reading Price had said, you know, if I'm going to write manure, I'm going to write grade A manure. And he was pretty much writing about, you know, for the species. Something to be said, I've liked some of the Hugh Cave stories. They're just fast moving. I mean, these stories don't drag for that. The and something I'll just kind of tag on, because there was only five Howard stories, is, you know, you get around 1940, Spicy Adventures started experimenting, throwing in some fantastic fiction, you know, ostensibly science fiction. There's like another, there's an interior there. But yeah, right here, you got, that's Robert Leslie Bell. And you know, kind of looks like, you know, like a Flash Gordon type thing. And these things are a hoot. Some of you might have known Sheldon Jaffrey. He used to come to PulpCon. And one of my all-time favorite anthologies is something he edited back in the 80s called Sensuous Science Fiction. And probably about half the stories came from Spicy Adventure. And they're just a riot. Heck of a lot of fun. You know, science fiction would be a lot more fun if it was like today, if it was more like Spicy Adventure instead of all this boring stuff. But you know, you take a look, here's the one, The Robot Awakes, that was actually, you credit Blue Merrill, that's actually Victor Rousseau. Another one with kind of a science fiction-y type look, and I mean, it has kind of a very much a Planet Stories type of look to it. And for that, Space Burial, I actually have a replica from the 70s of that one there, and again, Blue Merrill, and yeah, just cool looking action adventure, fantastic stuff. They call it science fiction is probably stretching it, and yeah, When Planets Mate. I mean, you just want to read something like that. And for that, and then the Ink of Gold, as opposed to the Clive Cussler novel, and again, Robert Leslie Bell. I was talking to John Woolley earlier about that, and I said, we need a sequel, Son of Sensuous Science Fiction. We need to like reprint a bunch of these stories from that. And then you had Henry Kuttner, August 1941, a story called Tropic Hell, which I've never read. Might not be too good, because not all Henry Kuttner is good. And you know, here's another one. But yeah, really interesting covers here. Here in the early 40s, you know, it's kind of like you had Action Stories for Fiction House was doing kind of the same thing, sneaking in some, excuse me, more fantastic type stuff, you know, and you know, maybe they were thinking about launching a science fiction magazine for that. And yeah, Mistress of Fury, and yeah, it's like a flying bicycle or motorcycle there, and yeah, definitely dynamic looking covers. And for that, but that's you know, pretty much that. So yeah, Robert E. Howard, you know, broke into Spicy Adventure and you know, sold some stories, and before he passed away, and they've all been reprinted. There was an Ace paperback in 1983 called She Devil. Those stories were collected, which is actually one of the hardest paperbacks to find. I bought it off the racks. I was in college at the time. You know. It's like, it was weird that those last couple, like Heroes of Bear Creek and She Devil, you'd see them at the bookshelves for like 2 weeks at the bookstores, and then they were gone. And then, you know, before you know it, it was like, you know, years later, the things were running for like $25, you know, back in the early 90s. And, but they were getting, Glenn Lord had told me that they had pretty small print runs on that, but and I think the Howard Foundation has these stories on it. There's a Spicy Robert E. Howard collection out there too, so it's not top tier Howard, but you know, the stories are quick, and you know, they're kind of, you know, typical mid-30s tropical adventure pulp on that. Any questions?
All right, which of the Howard stories are the business? Spiciest.
Yeah, which of the Howard stories are the spiciest? Well, you know, some of the Conans really are. You know, what's interesting is Deuce Richardson has a theory that he got laid somewhere like around 1931, because the stories are very sexless, where the characters have nothing interest. And he thinks he went to a whorehouse and was no longer a virgin, because all of a sudden, you know, you got Conan coming on. And even the first few Conans, you know, there's no romantic interest. And then it was, let me see here, I'd actually written it down. I was just kind of looking over here. Frost Giant's Daughter. Though I will make a caveat that that is not a human female, that is a Lamia, and really can't be true. But you get with like Black Colossus and then Slithering Shadow in 1933, the romantic, if not the sex element, is getting up front and center. So by the time, you know, he was writing this stuff in 35, you know, he was, old pro at it for that. Daryl.
Well, more general question. Remember that Marvel Tales, otherwise known as Marvel Science Fiction, attempted some sexy issues.
Yeah, they did like two or three.
Yeah, they were a thundering failure.
Yeah.
Do you think this is what would have discouraged the spicy people from trying a spicy science fiction?
Well, here's the thing. That was 1938. This is like 1941. So you have a chance, and it's kind of like, well, science fiction fans didn't have the greatest reputation in the 30s. You know, they were a bunch of geeks, nerds, and glue eaters, and Howard mentioned in 1933 in a letter to August Derleth that he viewed science fiction fans as among the most hidebound conservative fans there were. So I think it was a case of trying to market a science fiction magazine to science fiction fans, and they were having nothing of it, where, you know, I don't know who the audience was for the spicy. I mean, obviously men were as a case, but, you know, my guess is it's just the big science fiction explosion of the end of the 30s, early 40s, and everybody was just seeing what would, throwing it up on the wall and see what would stick. You know, it strikes me as kind of a very similar to a Planet Stories, but just a little more risque.
You've been listening to Pulp Tales, fascinating stories of the pulp magazines and the creative minds that brought them to life. Brought to you by The Pulp Net. Learn more about the pulp magazines through articles, blogs, bibliographies, links, over 100 episodes of this podcast, and much more at The Pulp Net. Your link to the pulp magazines for almost 30 years. Online at thepulp.net. Subscribe to Pulp Tales on your favorite podcast platform or listen to us on the web at thepulp.net. If you enjoy our content, please like us or leave us a review. And tell your fellow pulp fans about Pulp Tales. Thank you for listening and keep reading the pulps. Pulp Tales is copyright 2024 by William P. Lampkin.